Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Okay. You are about to hear a recording of the first ever live episode of Films to be Buried With that we recorded at the BFI a few weeks ago. It was an amazing night. Will Poulter was out of this world and the audience were fucking incredible. If you were there, please come to every gig I ever do. You were wonderful. I would like to thank Anna and Kate and Mel at the BFI for making this all happen. And Anna herself has her own podcast with her friend Henry, called the BFI podcast, the British Film Institute podcast. And if you like film, and I suspect you do, you should probably give that one a listen. But the main thing I want to tell you, other than telling you, what you're about to hear is mostly uncut, although we did make a few cuts because of, you know, legal reasons. But the main thing I want to tell you is not only was Will Poulter a very funny and excellent guest, he's also one of the nicest men you'll ever meet. And he insisted that he wouldn't take the fee for his appearance and that he wanted me to donate that fee instead to a charity of my choice. Now that charity is Parkinson's UK. So if you enjoy this episode and you're listening and you're feeling generous, then why not also donate something to Parkinson's UK, who do incredible work, and I wish them well. Thank you very much for listening and I hope you enjoy this live episode as it starts now. All right, so now we start the podcast proper. So if you could dim the lights and let's start recording. Okay, ready? Here we go. Look out!
It's time for Films to be Buried
With. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely love that. That was beautiful. Hello. And welcome to the very first live episode of Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I am a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a drug smuggler. And I love films. As Maya Angelou once said, I know why the caged bird sings. And I also know who Kaiser Soze is. But I'm not spoiling either of them for you. You should find out for yourselves. This episode is being recorded at the BFI South Bank, and today's special guest is a proper, actual, real movie star. A rare beast, equally adept at comedy as he is at drama. He's played a racist cop. He's been bitten on the nuts by a tarantula. He's been a maze runner, a chronicler of Narnia. He's been a ghost. He's kissed Rachel from Friends. And most impressive of all, he managed to understand what Tom Hardy was saying in The Revenant. Please welcome to the stage the incredible Mr. Will Poulter!
Hey, thank you. Hey, thank you.
He's here.
Hey.
I was very excited to have you here. Thank you very much. And you're a real yes-ander. You saw me taking off my coat and you started to strip. And I thought, this is going to be great.
And then I got a bit scared and stopped. Yeah, that's it. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I will say one thing before we start, right? A little secret, a little behind-the-scenes secret. When I usually record the podcast, I say to the guest, oh, if you say anything you regret or you don't want it, or if it's too personal, just say, we'll cut that. And we'll cut it. But now we have witnesses. So what I will say is if I say anything, because I'm not good at small talk, if I get too personal or you say something, you know, horrific or anything, we should have a safe word. And so you say Titanic and then we stop.
Got it. Got
okay?
It. Yeah, all right. That's fine with me.
So
yeah.
Let's... hello, Will.
Hi, Brett.
Do you like films?
I do.
Convenient.
Yeah. It's a good start. I thought
Come
it would
on.
Be... I love films, I got to say. I feel a bit fraudulent because I don't class myself... as a kind of film buff.
Right.
You know how some people are like foodies and then there are like film buffs. And I just like films, but I don't think I'm an expert at all. So I feel a bit fraudulent by being here, but I have watched them since I can remember. So that's...
Well, that will do.
Does that qualify me?
You've also been in films. You've been in a lot of films.
Yeah.
And you're excellent. I will say that. I don't mind it.
That is very
No,
kind.
I don't mind saying it. I watched, and I also re-watched a lot of your stuff before you came on. You do have range, don't you?
And you have patience, sir. That's very kind.
Yes, yeah, sad for all of them. You are like a good-looking John C. Reilly. No disrespect. No disrespect. In that, you can do drama and comedy very well.
I don't know if I agree. To be honest, any comparison to John C. Reilly is like very welcome. He's a bit of a hero of mine, just in terms of being dramatically and comedically accomplished. I don't know if that comparison is at all accurate, but I do love John C. Reilly. He appears later in my in our discussion.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted, before we sort of get on with it, I just want, because it's rare that I get a proper film star, and I'm very impressed.
I can't take that seriously. I'm not.
I've got like one serious question, two maybe less serious. Let's start with a less serious one.
Okay.
I watched a bit of Chronicles of Narnia, which you were in, and there was a scene, and I don't say this as a joke, like I mean it as an actor. I've done some acting, sure.
Mm.
There is a scene where you are on a ship, and you are having a sword fight with a CGI mouse. And I thought, fuck me, that must have been embarrassing on the day. It looks great and you're very committed and it's excellent. But there's lots of extras and it's a big set. And,
yeah.
And I'm assuming you're just going...
Yeah.
How was that?
It sounds like an acid trip. I was sword fighting a CGI mouse on a boat. That is sort of, to strip that back, it was a ship. What's up, half a ship on a gimbal, so it was like rocking like this.
Oh, wow.
By the side of the water, as opposed to being actually on the water. And then the CGI mouse was being played by a tennis ball on a stick.
Right.
And on the other end of the tennis ball on a stick was a stuntman, sort of, I think he was all dressed in green as well to be able to kind of CGI him out of the problem. And he was just sort of running around, kind of blindly sort of poking me with a stick. And I was running around blindly trying to imagine what it'd be like to sword fight a mouse. And at the end of it, I lose. I lose that fight to the mouse. and end up on my ass on a kind of wet ship deck. So it was a bizarre experience. It's one of those things, like, growing up as a kid, you know, I used to watch those scenes and not even really truly think about how they construct them. Just like, oh, the mouse is good at fighting, you know. And then when you do it and you see the mechanics behind it and how kind of painstaking and also awkward and weird it is, it kind of slightly ruins it for you. But it was also really good fun.
You know? Like, do you ever make eye contact with like a background artist mid thing and they give you a look like, I'm sorry, mate?
Yeah, all the time. All the time. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Here's the other thing I wanted to ask you. Now, you are in what I think is one of... Well, I think it was very well rated, but I don't feel it got the love that it fully deserved. I think it's one of the best films of the last few years, and that was Detroit. Give it a clap!
Thank you.
I felt like inside the actor's studio then. And then you were in Detroit. But Detroit is so fucking good, and you are excellent in it, and... Something I thought, again, as an actor, is there's a very long sequence where you are essentially kind of torturing people, and it's really upsetting, and it's long, and I was thinking, that must have taken a very long time to film that sequence, and I wondered what it was like, sort of between takes, because people are on their knees a lot, you're over there, you know, there's a lot of sort of domination and stuff going on, and everyone's very good. But I wondered, like, when they call cut, does everyone get up and go, you're right? Or was it like everyone stepped to separate? Like, how did it actually work?
Yeah. And I'm trying to tastefully manage the segue here between fighting the mouse on the ship and then of
similar
course.
Films.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know what? I think going into it, having all read the script and being educated on the fact that we were representing a real event in history, you know, an incident that actually happened and resulted in the death of five innocent African-American men, the stakes couldn't have been higher as far as paying respect to the reality of the situation and getting the details right, and everyone really being locked into faithfully representing what happened, but always while being safe and respectful, you know, to one another, and while handling the material. Key to achieving that, I think, was prefacing the shoot with a discussion as a cast,
right,
that we were all going to work as a team, and that while everyone had to go to some very dark places emotionally and, you know, some difficult challenges lay ahead, we had to sort of establish that there was mutual respect and mutual love and appreciation for one another. I think that was solid foundations to go and play the opposite on screen, if that makes sense. I think had we not established that relationship and we'd like done that kind of maybe slightly sort of, you know, methody thing, for want of a better or realer expression, of ignoring each other and then meeting on the day and then acting, you know, hatefully and brutally towards one another, I don't think that would have been helpful. And I know that sometimes that is the process and people do go about it that way, but I'm really proud of the fact that I was part of a cast that showed so much compassion and empathy for each other through those difficult scenes. Cause it's an amazing, amazing group of young people who are on screen and the best cast that I've ever worked with, I think. And that's no disrespect to any cast I've been a part of, but you know, it was special to be working with everyone in that film.
That's lovely. What a lovely answer. From you. Yes. You don't do method. You're not. We were talking a little bit about this backstage. I think we both have a healthy disrespect for method actors. Is that right?
Yeah.
Am I just outing you?
Not at all. I just think when method actors, here's the thing, and maybe, and granted, I'm coming from a place of ignorance and comparably, you know, the people who are regarded as method actors or spoken about publicly as method actors are far more experienced than me and have been doing it for a long time. So I don't want to disrespect anyone. I may have fundamentally misunderstood method acting, but to me, if you're an actor, you have a method, right? In the same way that, like, you don't go, he's a real food chef. He's a real food cook. You know, it's like everyone has a method. And for me, I don't care what your method is, provided that you respect the person that you work with and work around, and you don't ever think that you're more important than the person behind the camera or the person, you know, running to get the coffee or do you know what I mean? I think sometimes method acting is used as an excuse to just treat people terribly.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, did you hear about the terrible things that person did to all the people they worked with? What an amazing performance.
He was such a prick. Give him an Oscar.
Yeah. That's kind of odd to me. And I just think, I think you can be entirely committed to your performance and you can live in your character and you can do all of those things, but you should never do it at the expense of how you treat the people around you. I think that makes you a wanker, not a method actor.
We're only 15 minutes in, I'm already in love with you.
I may have established myself as a wanker for saying that, but that is how I feel.
Name names. No, don't worry. Will. Oh, fuck. No, it's terrible. I've forgotten to tell you something. Oh, it's awful. I haven't told you, and I should have probably told you. Well, I feel awful because we're 50 minutes in. I ain't told you. I should have told you when you got here because it's going to be a shock to you. I'm sorry.
Right.
Oh, how am I even going to break it to you? Jesus. Okay, listen, there's only one way of saying it. I just come out of it. Will, I'm so sorry, but you died. You died.
Oh.
Yeah. How did you die?
That's what this is.
Yeah.
Right.
Why do you think I'm wearing an Undertaker suit?
Oh, because I didn't see that until there's a big sign behind it. Right, are you wearing an Undertaker suit? That's
surprise.
I did.
How did you die?
I died. I thought about this long and hard.
Yeah, I hope so.
I did a bit of research into drowning, which is...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Go on.
Which... it's not fun. It's not cheery research. There was funner research attached to this. But I heard...
And Hang on. I'm so sorry to interrupt. You mean research for this podcast?
A little bit.
Or for an acting job?
No. Like,
you thought I'll look up which is the best way to die?
Is that
what you Googled?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. I like that. Done your homework.
And I heard that drowning, while it is, I'm sure, incredibly traumatic for the most part...
Well, it has its downsides.
I hear the like the sort of the end section, the like the sort of after credits of of drowning is actually quite euphoric.
That's what I've heard.
And is like maybe one of the best ways to die.
Best high you can ever have. That final breath. But who's telling that? I read that.
That's true.
I did read that, but who said it?
That is true. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Unless they did like a Ouija board afterwards and he went, it was fucking great.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. Lights back on. Yeah. Well, yeah, I thought about that. And then I thought about, I had a childhood memory of being in Kenya when my mum was born, went on holiday to Kenya. And there was an idea to go and swim with turtles. And I had like horrendous seasickness, like the worst seasickness I can imagine. And really strangely, even though seasickness really isn't that much about it, it's your stupid land-dwelling human body going, what's this? And it's like, it's fine. It's 70% of the world is made up of this stuff. You're just not, you know, equipped to deal with it. But I thought I was going to die. I was like, I was 11, 12 years old. I literally thought, oh, I'm going to be the first person to die at sea from seasickness. And I missed out on swimming with turtles. So I thought, if I drowned while swimming with turtles, and maybe they kind of like just respectfully like held me down a little bit while I swam with them, then I'd realize a childhood dream and die
of
euphorically.
Seasickness, then drowning.
Drowning with turtles.
With turtles.
With
They're
turtles.
Holding you down. What? Just what did you do to the turtles?
Or I don't want to like dive like the bends. Like, you know, if I swim up, I want them to kind of spare me of that. They'd have to be quite intelligent turtles. But.
You've gone for a swim. You're underwater.
Yeah.
You've seen some turtles. Hello. Yeah. And they've gone, get down.
Stay down.
And they've held you down. Yeah. And you've gone, I thought we were friends.
Yeah.
And they go, don't worry, you're in for a treat when you take that last breath.
Yeah, wait till after the credits, pal. You'll love it. Exactly.
No, it's a lovely death, actually.
So that's
peaceful
it,
and it's the last bit, but the middle bit, horrible.
Yeah.
Do you worry about death, Will?
I don't really.
No?
I don't. No, not majorly. It's not an anxiety. I have major social anxiety. Rooms full of people being one of them.
You're doing so well.
I feel safer with you here. Yeah, I struggle with anxiety for certain, but death anxiety is not one of them. Maybe I should be worried about it. But I don't swim with turtles that regularly. So.
No, stay out of the water. You'll be fine. Do you think that there's an afterlife? Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I don't, to be honest. I don't, unfortunately.
You think that's
other than maybe it's like a podcast with you. Maybe it's like another one of these.
Maybe.
Maybe it is. Yeah.
Okay, so you think it's nothing. Well, guess what? Surprise. You're totally wrong. There is an afterlife.
Uh-huh.
And they're really into film, which you kind of like. So, you know, it's all right for you. It's a bit annoying because that's all they talk about.
Right,
but,
right.
But there's a heaven, they're obsessed with films, and all they ever want to know about is your life, but through films.
Oh, amazing.
So the first thing they ask you is, what is the first film that you remember seeing?
The first film I remember seeing was Hook.
Yes. Love Hook.
Which I think was 1996. 1993 maybe.
How old are you? Can you say?
I was born in 1993.
Well, you weren't a baby then.
Were you? So I think.
Do you remember? Was it the cinema?
I was no. As in, I remember. That's the first film I can remember sitting down and kind of properly taking in. You know, as a young child. But I think it was released in 1993.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
92. I'm going. Anyone?
91. 91.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I literally was obsessed with it. I you know, knew about the story of Peter Pan, and that had kind of captured my imagination as a kid. And by the time I saw this, I had a sort of, you know, rough idea of the story. But this film blew my mind. And yeah, I think I watched it nonstop, you know, well into my teens, pretty much, just because I loved it so much.
Did you watch it at home with family? Or
I watched it at home, VHS. I remember the tape. I remember doing that thing that everyone does with VHS, where like you get on your knees and you walk on your knees.
Yes.
To the VHS very seriously as well, because at the time, that's how you put in a VHS tape. So no one questions. Like now with DVD, like you stand up and you like, you know, whatever, you pop it in. Blah, blah. But when you did VHS, you were just literally just. give it a little spit, and then you put it in, and no one would question that, because it's like...
For the listeners at home, Will just did some brilliant acting. That's it.
Fought a mouse. Yeah, so... I remember it well, and I remember, like, Robin Williams being the kind of, I don't know, just the magician that he was and always will be, and kind of guiding you through that incredible story. It's the most amazing cast. Dustin Hoffman as Hook just haunted you and also kind of like entertained you in equal measure. And Julia Roberts plays Tink, and
Glenn Close is a secret pirate with a beard.
There you go. Yeah. Glenn Close, secret pirate with a beard. It was just an amazing, amazing movie. And I loved it. And I wanted to be a Lost Boy, and I wanted to, like, you know, I wanted to be part of Rufio's gang and all that sort of stuff. It was a beautiful, beautiful film.
I love Hook very much. And I believe I have said this, so I have apologies if you've heard it on a podcast. But the thing that is sad about Hook is Steven Spielberg always says in interviews it's the only film of his he thinks is shit. And I'm like, you're wrong. That's no Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. This is really good. I love Hook. I think the beginning of the before they get to Neverland, that whole section, I think, is masterpiece. Beautiful.
I think it really... That's such a shame that he thinks
I'm like, what's your problem, mate?
Yeah. Tell him. Tell him when he comes on.
Stephen, come on, mate. Be proud of your work. Why are you so full of doubt? You're going to be all right.
Self-confidence, Mr. Spielberg, yeah.
That's a lovely answer. Did that make you want to be an actor? Did you know when you wanted to be in all this?
Yeah, definitely contributed to it. That film massively. Looking back, you know, some of the earliest films I watched, and I can't really remember, were like black and white cowboy films, which were obviously full of very problematic mistruths about, you know, who the bad people in America were. And looking back, like, terrible for my education. But I used to sit inches from the screen and watch black and white cowboy movies and kind of want to be a cowboy sort of thing. That was maybe the first sort of influence on me, as poisonous as that possibly was. But Hook, yeah, first film I properly remember watching, having a connection with. And Robin Williams has just always been an idol, you know, and I think the way that he goes between drama and comedy is masterful. He does it better than anyone ever. And, you know, I guess I always knew him to be more of a dramatic actor because of Hook, even though there are comical elements. Yeah. I kind of always considered him a dramatic actor, and it was only later that I discovered him as this blistering stand-up comedian. And
Morgan Mindy must have blown your fucking mind.
There you go. I've just always loved the man ever since.
That's lovely. What is the film that scared you the most?
The Witches.
Oh, I love The Witches.
The Witches is right up there.
Yes.
Yeah. The makeup, the special effects makeup in that is truly haunting. And it was, The Witches was so scary to me that the figures of the witches, the faces of the witches, genuinely haunted my dreams for a long, long time. And bless any poor elderly woman who vaguely resembled any of the, because I'd be in shock, you know, in the supermarket aisles with my mum staring at a slightly innocent elderly woman thinking maybe she's a witch. You know, that's awful to do that, but that is
grandma.
What I lived with for a while. Exactly. Yeah, poor Grandma Joyce. So that terrified me. I think the other one also that really scared me was, funnily enough, which is bizarre to say, but Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
That is not bizarre to say. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, the bad guy is basically Jimmy Savile.
The, like, child snatcher.
No, I don't mean to be that, like, I don't mean that cheaply. It literally is. It dresses the same. The thing is, it's terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. The bad guy is a kiddie fiddler. What's he called?
Yeah, child snatcher.
Snatcher.
Child snatcher.
I mean, what's going on?
Yeah. No, 100%. That was one of the scarier films. Alongside Witches, I think he also haunted my dream. And it's one of those characters that you bring up with lots of people around, you know, who maybe belong to my generation and watch it at the same time, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, the child snatcher, I think, I imagine has appeared in a few people's nightmares. He was scary.
Anyone here scared of child catcher? Not even like happy about it, like,
no,
properly like traumatized.
Like, thanks, I got sleep tonight. Like, sorry. Yeah,
great answer. And also The Witches, it's Nicholas Roeg who made what I consider to be top three greatest films of all time. Don't Look Now. Thank you.
Oh.
Thank you for coming.
That's in your top three?
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. Right. What is the film that made you cry the most?
Philadelphia.
Oh, lovely.
Made me bawl my eyes out. Yeah. really, really made me cry a lot.
Did you watch it? When did you watch it?
I think my older sister, Jo, literally said, "Watch this film, you'll cry a lot." All right. And like, for some reason, as quite a...
You thought, that sounds fun.
Yeah, as quite a young kid, I signed up for that. Be prepared, this one will make you cry. Watch it, and it, boy, did it. It was just so upsetting. And I think also so much of it, focuses on the miseducation that leads to a lack of empathy surrounding people who are diagnosed with AIDS, particularly at that time. I certainly didn't know, and it's presented in a quite a sort of simplistic way, in a way that really appeals to your humanity and your sort of compassion, by saying, here is someone with an ailment through no fault of their own, through the choices that they are free to make in their life. They've been given this deadly thing to cope with. And are you going to be one of those people that is like compassionate and understanding of that? Or are you going to slam the door in their face and cast them out as a leper? And like watching him come into contact with people while they wrestle with that decision, and some of the harshness he's met with, is just like, it tears you apart. And Denzel Washington's growth as well, around understanding what Tom Hanks's character is going through is amazing. It unfurls in a really incredible, natural, beautiful way.
And it's got that scene where he does the opera, which sort of, I always think, is an interesting, like, it's so on the edge of being any more. That's a really embarrassing scene.
Yeah.
But they pull it off. It's really moving and stuff, but it's so full.
With that high angle rotating camera move. Yeah.
All in red and stuff.
Yeah. Right. No, it's so true. And I think also there's something about, I mean, I can't sing a note, but there's something about opera, which I never listen to. Mm. If I'm feeling a little bit emotional, maybe a couple too many glasses of red wine, someone sticks on some opera, I immediately start welling up. And I don't even know why.
Because of Tom Hanks. That's right.
Yeah. It's a beautiful film, and it made me cry my eyes out.
Lovely answer. You're doing very well so far.
A bit nervous. As I say, I'm fraudulent. I haven't seen all the films, so I'm a bit nervous.
Well, so far you've seen three, and that's so far enough. You've got
almost as many as I've been in, actually.
What is the film that is sort of meant to be bad? Most people say this is bad. Critically, it's not liked. Mm. But you're like, fuck you, this is the best. What is the film you love, even though many don't?
Okay, I think I had a number of these on my list. You're an incredibly funny man and a certified professionally funny man, on top of being an actor. I think that...
Kiss me. Oh, sorry.
You're right.
Sorry.
Did you... Sorry. Someone shout that?
Sorry, that was... I don't know what that was.
Yeah.
Buddy!
That's right. So I know that you empathise with how frustrating it is when critics get a little bit snooty just because something's a comedy.
Oh, yeah. Critics hate comedies.
Do you know what I mean?
Hate them.
It's mad. And I also get particularly upset when there are incredible comedic performances that never get recognised at the big fancy award shows where they give out the statues and stuff.
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying this is, an Oscar picture necessarily. Step Brothers. Thank you so much. A collective kiss me to this room, because I love that film so much. And I genuinely think that the performances of Will Ferrell and the legendary John C. Reilly, they're equally legendary,
the
Will Ferrell,
but
are amazing, are so good. They are so convincing as these 40-year-old men who haven't conformed to the kind of, social expectations placed on them since time began. And they are, like, lovably idiotic. And they think in, an unmatched way. They look at the world through this, like, crazy kaleidoscope. And it's so funny. And it's one of the most quotable films, I think, I've ever seen. And when I see it, even people who like comedy are like, oh, it's a bit silly that, isn't it? And like, I get it. It is really silly. I actually prefer things that are a bit more grounded, things that are a bit more realistic.
Yeah, like Narnia.
Like Narnia.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it's important to mention, this has no mice fighting in it whatsoever.
None.
So,
I
still loved it. no swashbuckling on ships. But I just think it's really, really funny. And I think it's probably got... 30% of Rotten Tomatoes or something, but I think it's amazing.
Tell me about, it has in it a woman I think is amazing, Catherine Hahn.
Yes.
So funny.
Yes.
So funny in it. And I believe she's in We're the Millers.
She's in We're the Millers, yeah.
Is she all right?
Oh, she's a mate. Catherine Hahn is one of my favourite people I've ever worked with.
Oh, thank God.
She's so... What'd you say?
I said, thank God.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Would have been awful.
She's amazing. So funny as well. Virtually impossible to work with, though, in the sense that she's so funny and she comes up with so many different alts that you never know what's coming in. It's really hard to keep a straight face with Catherine. I remember her throwing out, you know, a million different versions of the same line just to keep it interesting for us. And at one point I was like, I can't even look at her because, you know, I'm finding it too hard to stay through it. And I also think that the woman who plays Nancy, who is Will Ferrell's mother in this film, is the lawyer in Philadelphia. She plays the lawyer in Philadelphia.
Hang on, Will Ferrell's mum?
So Will Ferrell's mum in this?
Is Mary Steenburgen, no?
Yeah, and is she in Philadelphia? Or have I just massively embarrassed myself? I think she is. Okay, thank you. Yeah, yeah. So,
thank you, Labyrinth.
So that's just an unnecessary link for you. But yeah. Yeah, and I mean, like, completely different performances. And I think I empathise with her because I am absolutely her in the sense that I'm that person who's working with very funny people just trying not to laugh. She's trying not to laugh the entire movie. Yeah. She's dealing with Will Ferrell vomiting comic genius, and she's just trying her best not to laugh her guts out of her mouth.
You're very funny.
What?
You're very funny. what is...
Terrifying social
it's interest. A lovely... it's a funny film.
I'm such a big fan, and I know it's just one of those films that's not critically like spoken about, and I get why. But I think people overlook how genius the performances are. I think like you could method act as a 40-year-old who still lives with their mother and not produce a performance as good as Will Ferrell or John C. Reilly. Yeah, yeah. I was well on my way actually to method acting as someone who was still living with their mum.
What is the film that you used to love years ago? You loved it. You were always banging on about it. And then you've watched it recently and you've gone, oh, shit, that has not dated well.
My one was... I genuinely used to, like, sincerely, as a 12-year-old who thought he'd seen all the films, was, like, The Island, I think, is my greatest film.
I forgot about The Island.
Mate, without batting an eyelid, you say that's the greatest film ever made.
Right, so remind me, The Island is like a film of two halves. In the first half, they're trapped in the Matrix on an island, right? But they're all in white, and they have to like... And he's going, it's not real, and she's going, isn't it? And then they break out, and then they run for an hour. Is that it? That's The Island, yeah.
Pretty much. Okay. That is a really good summation of what it is.
It's like The Matrix, but it's all white.
It's all, it's like, exactly, it's like an all-white Matrix.
Yeah,
it's really bizarre, and there are some really strange things. I think what I came into contact with, and I watched it again last night, and and I was like, oh, bless me. I was like, I think my suspension of disbelief, my ability to suspend my disbelief, was so much greater at 12, 13, as you can imagine. And so I just forgave the fact that, like, Ewan McGregor travelled through an entire skyscraper while on this like flying bike thing. He just travels through the entire skyscraper, and then they sort of come out the other side of the skyscraper, and he sort of goes like, oh, like, like he got splashed with some cold water or something. It's like, he just traveled through a building. And they sustain unbelievable injuries. At one point, they fall from a like 40-foot ceiling straight onto some like bodies. There are like bodies in hospital beds, like filling this room, and they fall from the height of the ceiling, which is about 40 feet down onto these bodies. And again, they just sort of get up like nothing happens. And inexplicably, it's just raining indoors. no explanation for it. It is just raining. And it's just, I think it's just Michael Bay just going, you know what would be cool in this scene? If they were wet.
Is it... Isn't The Island Michael Bay's, like, deep one? Like, the one he was like... No, I mean it. I think it was. He was like, I'll do a... It's one true. For them, one for me. And this was his... I'm using my brain here.
Yeah. This is so... Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, I didn't think about it like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think it was. Like, he was like, what if we were all on an island?
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, and there was just... There was a lot of that watching it back. I was like, okay, I forgave a lot. And it's funny, you know, there's the very first episode of Black Mirror.
Yes.
With Daniel Kaluuya, who's the best actor in Britain right now.
100%.
The first episode of Black Mirror seems to actually vaguely lend from some of the things that are in...
Do you mean 50 Million Merits, whatever it's called?
The Island. Yes.
Where they like have to do the X Factor and...
Like, I was watching The Island, yeah. And I was like, Charlie Brooker's a genius. I'm not saying that he went, nicking that, that's genius. But Charlie Brooker's not short on ideas. But I was watching it, and I was like, oh, Black Mirror's just a really great, well-executed version of
the
this.
Island.
Yeah.
You said Charlie Brooker's stuff from Michael Bay.
No, just without all the silly, like, you know, travelling through... Yeah. The other side of skyscrapers and, you know.
Holy moly.
Yeah, and just, yeah, that's what I think. I regret saying that.
Give back your BAFTAs.
Yeah, exactly. Your fraud. Yeah.
What was your other one? Did you have another one? You said there were...
Oh, that I watched and doesn't hold
up.
You
don't like anymore.
Do you know what? I was watching the rugby just earlier in the pub with some friends, and one of them went, oh, are you going to say goal?
Oh.
And I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, oh, and I've got a mate in goal, so I don't want to, but no. Goal. And I think that's just because CGI, again, you just, you know, it was like, oh, yeah, sure, all right, he's on the pitch. And then now you watch and you go, oh, he's not. No, he's nowhere near a football.
Also, just kick a ball. They're not expensive.
Do you know?
Why are you CGIing a ball?
You're so right.
There's a ball. I'll give you a ball. That's you can have my ball for the day. Give it back.
It's just bad budgeting. Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Goal could have been better had they had a better budget manager. That would have been it. But they had apparently
all cars. we ain't got any footballs. Yeah. So
apparently the catering was incredible on Goal. Like one of the best. Yeah.
Great answer.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity, so I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Now, this is my personal favorite question of all the questions, which is, what is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily because the film might be shit, but because of the memory you have around that film. It might have been a first date. It might have been a day you got a job. It might have been someone died. Something that you will always remember that film because of that day.
Okay, so the first time I met my now girlfriend was a year ago, just over a year ago.
Sorry, fellas.
And the first
huge people just walking out. There we go. Ah, fuck that. I bought a ticket, you know, forget it. Sorry, continue.
But no, this is when we were back as friends, so it wasn't, you know, thankfully it wasn't our kind of first date, because it would have made for the worst first date ever. But we watched You Were Never Really Here.
Oh, great film.
Yeah, which...
Not a date movie.
It's not a date movie. Don't let that romantic red flare at the top of the poster confuse you, because a little bit down there is a hammer. There's also a girl in need of being saved from pretty terrifying circumstances. It's... Lynn Ramsey as a director is so phenomenal. Saw it at the BFI.
Lovely.
Shout out to the BFI. I'm just trying to work out if I saw it in this room. I didn't see it in this room. That would have been very weird. But saw it at the BFI. Watched the Q&A with Lynn Ramsey afterwards.
Oh, wow.
while sat next to my now girlfriend, and we just like marveled at how amazing she was, and she divulged all of these stories about Joaquin Phoenix, who's an actor who I'm obsessed with, and I know I might be deemed to be very hypocritical here, because I know there is talk of him being quite method or whatever, but she was really interesting in her sort of discussions about working with Joaquin, and he's one of those actors that is so good that I watch and I'm like, either I just keep going forever in a useless pursuit of what he does, or I just give up, because he's magic. Like, he's someone I watch and I go, you're not acting, you're just, I don't know what you are. Like, you're this cosmic talent. I think he's phenomenal. And she said he was great to work with, but he was brutally defensive of his character. He was like, you know, if something was bullshit, if he felt like there was a prop or a suggestion or something that was in any way detracting from realism, even wanted to take, like, would throw it out. And I don't think that's to say that he wasn't collaborative or he wasn't up for the discussion, because I think that's key, regardless of how big or great you are. Like, mm-hmm. I think, you know, you should always maintain that. But he was just very, very defensive of what was real with everything. He wouldn't let decisions get made for him, any decision, big or small, that may even vaguely be associated with his character or his arc. He was pedantic about making sure everything was real and would this exist in real life, and, you know, and I respect that. I think that's wicked.
So you went on a first date with a woman to see a film about a man killing paedophiles with a hammer, and you held hands and thought, this is going to last. She said, oh, lovely choice, thank you, I love you.
We were friends for about 6 months. Okay. After that, before, you know, we became a couple, as they say. Mm-hmm. But maybe in that 6 months, she was just reflecting. I don't know what date two is going to be like. Terrified. But I will always remember that film for that reason.
You were like, date two, I got tickets to Climax.
Exactly.
That's lovely, in a way. All right, here's one. I feel awkward. Look me in the eyes.
Yeah.
Well, I can't do it to your eyes. What is the film you found the sexiest?
Oh.
What was it?
So this is like the first film that I remember being a little bit sexy. Is that it?
It's your interpretation.
Okay.
It's a film where you thought, oh, hello. Oh, hello. Something's happening.
Okay. I think this film I'm mentioning because I just want to talk about it. Okay. And I think a lot of people remember it partly for this reason. If you saw it as a silly little boy at the age that I saw it, Titanic.
Hang on. Does that mean you don't want me to ask the question?
That's
a safe
again.
Word.
Oh, no, no. Oh, I want to talk about
it. You want to talk about it.
I want to talk about it. Sorry. Yeah.
Titanic, forget it.
No, yeah. Just scream iceberg and walk off. Right. I remember this being the first time that I saw nudity on screen, like in my mum and dad's house. And I always remember like watching Titanic and just being like, please don't come on in the drawing scene. Just please don't come on when Jack is drawing Rose. But I remember that being the first time I saw anything remotely sexual on TV and being like, wow. And it being really kind of beautiful as well, and like very kind of tasteful. And that was maybe my argument, you know, as a kid to my mother. It's tasteful, Mum.
Put it away. But I'm doing it tastefully.
Exactly.
Sorry.
You were talking about a paintbrush, right? Paintbrush.
You were just painting the TV.
Well, I'm just painting my masterpiece.
Yeah.
My mum on her knees with a VHS. No, you're not. And I love the film. I think DiCaprio and Kate Winslet at the heart of it are just so amazing. I think it's also, I've read quite a lot about the shooting process of this film. Excuse me, I'm not getting emotional. that sounded like I was about to cry.
It's all right, she was beautiful.
I read a lot about the shooting process of the film and just how problematic it was and how many obstacles they came up against. Crazy stories. The project literally nearly sank multiple times. They faced untold challenges as far as making a film is concerned. James Cameron at one point was like, I'm doing it for free, we're taking my fee and we're putting that in the budget or whatever, did that, which isn't heroic by any means because he's fine for money, I think, but they had all kinds of crazy things.
The crew spiked the water, do you know that?
Did that happen?
They were so angry, the crew, because it went on forever, that someone put acid in the water cooler. Do you know that?
No.
It's like climax is so dark and I never slept since I read that story. But yeah, someone spiked the whole... So for a day, they were all going, fucking hell, it's like being in Narnia.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, go on.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
So all that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, just there were just like so many stories about how difficult it was. But at the core of it is this incredibly real... just like magnetic connection between these two human beings while the room is like filling up with water and they've got one take to do it, that you don't question for a second that they're like madly in love and they're going to do everything they can to like get out. And I just think they must have been under so much pressure to perform, you know, that connection with that level of authenticity, and they did it. And it's just, I marvel at that. I think that's crazy. And when I did The Revenant, we were all complaining.
I was going to ask about this, yeah.
Right. When we were all complaining about how difficult that was, this got to be the most difficult job in history. Leo was like, nah. that's cute and all, but nah. Because this was
they
supposedly...
They were always wet.
This was, yeah.
Yeah.
Always and cold. Whereas on Revenant, we were just always cold.
The Revenant stresses me out, worrying about how cold you were. For the whole film, I just go, fights must have been horrible every day.
Imagine my mum. My mum's, Yeah. She really dedicated her life to making sure I would, like, had a coat on when I went outside. So
you won't feel the benefit when you do The Revenant. Great. Lovely answer. Classy. That is a classy answer.
Okay. Thanks.
Well done. What is the film that you most relate to? Where you watch it, you go, that's me, that is. Might be the character, might be the world, might be the atmosphere of it. Something about it, you go, that's the most film me.
I think School of Rock.
It's one of my favourite films.
I love it. So, and they're doing it they're doing it in the theatre at the moment. They're doing
I've seen it, it's brilliant.
Is it? Really? Yeah,
it's really good.
Amazing.
It's really good.
Zach, particularly in the School of Rock.
Mate, that's you, is it?
That, yeah, pretty much.
God, that breaks my heart.
Truthfully, yeah. If he was me, Zach would have like a stripy polo shirt and like a Casio wristwatch and like a massive backpack that made me look like a tortoise. But emotionally, I think being that kid, the reason I chose is being that kid who at school, like academically, like wasn't necessarily clicking, like didn't enjoy school, socially found it awkward and tough to navigate, but then had a creative outlet, Zach's being music, mine being drama, and then having a teacher that comes in to your world and just blows it wide open. That teacher for me was Laura Lawson, my drama teacher, and she was the creator of School of Comedy. So the parallels between this and School of Rock are kind of quite strong. Laura, who performed as Laura Black, was my Jack
really?
Black. Yeah. And she just gave me confidence and, you know, told me that, like, there was more to life than, you know, maths and other things that I didn't understand and you know, gave me the opportunity to perform. So, yeah.
Zach attack.
I mean, I wish I could play a musical instrument. I really related to his experience at school of being kind of socially repressed and then having a creative outlet, an extracurricular activity kind of draw you out of your shell and make you a more confident, happy person, for sure.
Are you going to make me cry?
Just don't say Philadelphia.
Really good answer. Well done. What is the film that you think objectively is the greatest film of all time? Might not be your favourite. But aliens come, they go, what cinema are you guys, this?
Oh.
What is it?
And they go, we've heard about this film called The Island. I go, no. That was ages ago.
I've changed my mind.
Do you know what? It's what I think objectively is the greatest film of all time, and I think also what is my personal favourite film of all time. Good Will Hunting, I think. And I love it so much. Again, Robin Williams being incredible. It's a film that I've watched so many times. Very inspiring as well, hearing that Ben Affleck and Matt Damon had such a huge hand in writing it and coming up with the story. And I just think, yeah, it taught me a lot as well, I think, about being emotionally vulnerable and sensitive as a man as well. Like, not buying into the sort of, you know, toxic expectations that come with being masculine, that you don't show emotion, you don't open up, you don't, you know, talk about your feelings. And you know, I also received therapy for anxiety and depression when I was younger, and so watching those scenes unfurl between Matt Damon and Robin Williams's characters had an added sort of specialness to it for me, and I just wanted to be in the room with those two men discussing, you know, their vulnerabilities, and it was just great to watch.
Can I ask you something very personal, and you might Titanic this?
Yeah.
I also have seen a therapist. Sure, there's nothing wrong with that. But because of this film, do you not find, particularly when I started therapy, I just kept waiting for them to go, it's not your fault. I kept thinking, when are we going to shortcut? Like, I know the end. Get on with it. It's not my fault.
It's so funny.
But then she was like, I think it is your fault. No, forget it. I want my money back.
That's so funny.
The other thing I would do you know the story about the how when they took the script around for this? Do you know this about the secret scene they put in?
Tell me. I know a little bit.
I'll
about
tell you if you don't know this story, that Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, and I know this from often you'll write a script and you send it to people and you have meetings with them, and then you go in the room and they'll go, oh, you're a genius, we love it, and you always know they've not read it. And I was in LA once and I went to meet this person about a script, and he went, I love your script, buddy, you're a genius. And I looked in his eyes and I thought, you definitely haven't read it. And I said, what's your favourite bit? And without missing a beat, he went, the ending. And I was like, I hate you. Anyway, the point is, when they were doing Good Will Hunting, they were sending the script around as a test for how they'd know if people were actually reading it. There was a scene that they wrote in the middle of two of the therapy scenes where, out of nowhere, it said, interior bedroom, Ben Affleck and Matt Damon's characters, fuck. And then it went back to the therapy. So they'd know when they'd go into a meeting that someone would go, we really love the script, but it's quite weird, this sudden scene of... And if no one said that, they'd sit there going, all right, you're full of shit. It's a good trick. So now I put that in all my scripts. Ben Affleck fucks Matt Damon.
Yeah.
that's lovely. That's a lovely answer. What is what's the one film you could watch over and over, or have watched the most over and over again, other than Hook?
There's a few, truthfully.
Okay.
Snatch is one of them. Snatch is one of those films that I watched over and over and over again. Just such a energetic, funny... It's problematic in a sense that it 100% romanticizes criminal behavior.
Yeah.
But there is this veneer of like caricature over everything that I think exists in a lot of... Very much on purpose. And I think in a way that's executed brilliantly by Guy Ritchie and a lot of his stuff. That means you do... take it with a pinch of salt, and you watch it with an element of like fun in mind, and you know the dialogue is very slick, it's iconic, you know, it is unique to I think the way that Guy Ritchie pens things. The other one that I could watch over and over again, I mean, School of Rock being one of them as well, but yes. Shaun of the Dead.
Lovely.
I just,
you're back in the game.
I'm dead again. Shaun of the Dead, amazing. Edgar Wright, huge fan of. In media studies at school, all I would do with everything is just rip off Edgar Wright's editing style, and in my gross verge appropriation of his work was just like such a messy edit that you didn't really know what was going on, whereas he obviously does it masterfully.
Yeah.
And shoots action like better than anyone, but yeah, I just love Shaun of the Dead. I thought it was so funny. I'm not even a really huge, or at least at the time I first watched that film, not a huge like horror genre sort of fan necessarily. Wasn't really into like zombie movies. Shaun of the Dead was just like unbelievable. And without even seeing Dawn of the Dead initially when I watched it, I was just like, this is amazing. I think it's so fun, and I could watch it a million times over.
What is Oh, here we go. One negative bit. Don't like being negative, but we'll do it quick. What's the worst film you ever saw?
Oh, see, and I feel bad because I think there's some great people in it. And, you know, it was made by hardworking human beings. There's a film called All About Steve.
Sandra Bullock and Bradley Cooper.
Oh, that is... So I think Sandra Bullock, the year after she got her Oscar nomination for Blindside, she got the Razzie for this. And she directed it as well.
No, and I've not seen this one, and that is rare on this show. Would you like to tell me what happens?
Can I be honest? It's so messy that, like, it's hard to even describe what it's about.
Okay. But it's about Steve.
But yeah. Oh, it's all about that.
I got that much.
Yeah. And you're thinking, who of those three men are Steve?
Yeah.
Or is Sandra playing Steve? Who knows?
Is it a slasher movie?
Yeah, where she kills people with an umbrella.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a romantic comedy. She's a weather person.
She's,
is that it?
Yeah, yeah. It's a romantic comedy. He, I think, is a reporter. He's a cameraman for a news reporter team channel thing. And then she is almost like a Bridget Jones-esque character. And she's painted as this, you know, woman who's sort of struggling in her romantic life, and everyone around her is telling her that she needs to find a man to be complete, sort of thing. And that is, you know, I imagine, understandably, very frustrating. So she, like, begrudgingly, like, goes on a date and meets Steve, who's Bradley Cooper's character, and really likes this man. And they have a quite kind of comedically sort of tragic first date, but she really likes him. And then she pursues him across the country and, like, turns up at one of the things that he's reporting. She's like, oh, I figured you'd be here filming it. He's like, yeah, okay. And then she kind of continues to pursue him. And then it just goes so awry and all sorts of strange things happen. He's reporting some of the worst and least interesting things going on. He reports, like, the biggest manhole in America. He reports on a potato festival where you paint faces on potatoes and the best painted potato.
You're actually selling the film now.
Honestly, it's so bad that it's almost worth watch. Like,
what, so it's like a stalker romantic comedy. She's like a stalker.
Yeah, it's really terrifying if I really think about it.
Right, okay.
And it's just very, very bad. It's really bad. Okay. It's really bad. And it got,
they've all done all right.
They've all done fine. It's interesting, 7% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh.
That is
someone liked it.
So some people out there think it's fresh.
What's the film that made you laugh the most, or have you already answered this?
With Step Brothers.
Yeah.
Step Brothers does make me laugh. Yeah. I laugh at the poster. Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I love it. Step Brothers makes me laugh the most. And I've also watched the blooper reel so many times. And for me, on a much less sort of professional and less acclaimed level, like, it reminds me of the fun I had doing School of Comedy with my mates, where you're just literally trying to get through the day, not laughing, you know, because you're having so much fun doing it. And it looks like two guys who, albeit are in their 40s and playing exactly that, are still feeling the joy of, like, kids just doing what they've always loved. It's pure joy, Step Brothers, I gotta say.
Great answer.
I love it.
You can have it twice.
Okay, thanks.
Now listen, there's an exclusive for those of you who listen to podcasts. Usually that's sort of it for the questions, other than your favourite. But you've said your favourite, haven't you?
Said my favourite.
I've added two questions. Look out! Two new questions. We'll do them quickly.
You've got a fly that's...
I know, there's a fly here.
He loves you.
I feel like Belloc in Raiders of the Lost Ark. I'm having to continue
That's like the third time he's come back.
Yeah, yeah. I'll keep going. What is, to you, the best opening scene or sequence in a film?
I really like There Will Be Blood as an opening sequence.
Love it.
Amazing. Another person who is reportedly a method actor, but such a phenomenal.
Turns out we love method actors.
We actually love them. We love them. When they're not
journey.
Being winkers. Yeah. As Daniel Plainview, like, just incredible. And the opening's amazing. There's... Mm. I don't think any accompanying music, there's no dialogue for at least...
I think it's 27 minutes.
Yeah.
No dialogue.
And I just...
To be exact.
Captivated. And yeah. it's not as potentially, what's the word, like pretentious or as it could be. It's fascinating. Paul Thomas Anderson is Paul Thomas Anderson. So naturally, like, it's visually beautiful. And I just remember just like, I think it's the only film that I watch and I rewind just to watch the beginning again. Like, I'll get like around 30 minutes and be like, oh, I just watched this. And I'll take it back right to the beginning because I just think it's so, so beautiful. I love it. Yeah.
Love that film.
You approve.
100%. You get 100% there.
Get in.
That's a great film.
Yeah, it's a fresh choice.
And what is your best closing sequence to a film?
So, having said, use the word pretentious, my choice is arguably a little bit pretentious.
Well, let's hear it.
Because it's a one-shot film.
So the whole film is the closing sequence?
And the opening.
Yeah.
And clever. The middle, if you think about it.
Clever answer. You really? Pretentious, clever.
Thank you. Victoria.
I fucking love Victoria. You're back in the game.
Yeah!
Love Victoria.
I just think it's amazing.
Have you seen this? You must see it. Oh, it's good.
How many people have seen? Was that like a 50-50 almost?
Yeah.
That sounded like a 50-50.
Well,
yeah.
You've all got your know what to do tonight.
I honestly, I'm going to go as far as say as this is in my top 10 films of all time.
It's brilliant.
It's amazing. It's a one-shot film. As I understand it, they took 5 days to shoot it. I think they did 3 takes and they got it on the second take or something like that.
No, I think it's the third. I think the first take, they were all so scared that they did it, but he said that it was all a bit too reserved.
Right.
Second take, he said, loosen up, and they went mental, and he went, all right, not that much. And then the third take is the one.
Sorry, it makes sense that they ended on the third take. It's not like after they did a like 2-hour one-shot film. Yeah. Should we just do one for gag?
One for safety.
Yeah, just try something different on this one. That makes much more sense.
Yeah.
That's why you host it, and I. I love it. Some of the most like naturalistic performances I've seen.
Yeah.
It's an incredible feat of camera work. I think camera operators don't get enough credit. Mm. We're always talking about the directors and often the DOPs, camera operators, anyone in the camera department, like salute, I think, work so incredibly hard without the credit they deserve.
You know what always stressed me out about Victoria? If you haven't seen Victoria, so it's a one shot, but it goes, it isn't like just in one room, it goes all over town and helicopters appear, like it's really complicated. And there's a scene quite late on, it's not really a spoiler, but they go into a flat. And there's like two people who've maybe got two lines who are sort of like, oh, surprised to see these criminals in their flat. And I thought, being them, being the lead is easy because you can improvise and you're playing for it. But if you're 2 hours into the film, there's someone, like an AD behind the door, he's going, they're coming. Don't fuck this up because we've done all of it.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the door opens and you go, fuck, oh shit, sorry.
It's
and they have
so
to start.
True.
I mean, it's they should get the Oscars.
That is true. Imagine if they were to ruin the entire film. I think
pressure, you'd be behind that door. Yeah. They're coming.
Zach Galifianakis talks about it on Birdman. He talks about being at the stage door, like listening in to this amazing scene, and it's like, you know, 7 minutes long, and he's like, oh shit, you know, and all he's got to, and that has cuts, obviously, Birdman has cuts, whereas this truly isn't stitched together. It is one, which is just mind-blowing. But he's there at the point of the stitch, and it relies on him opening the door and saying his line right. And he's saying his line right, and he says that his line was just something really basic, but the pure pressure of messing up this incredibly complex 7-minute scene meant that every time he opened the door, he just went, you know, like, Zach, you know. But it's an amazing film, and Lea Costa is the lead, and she's incredible.
Yeah.
And Sebastian Schiffer, who's the director, he's got a film called Roads coming out soon. Which is due to be really great. But it's beautiful, and it's you know, it's a rare thing. Few people pull off, you know, a technical feat like this, and they do it really, really beautifully, and her performance is outstanding. So,
and I also think it's one of the only times. Often I see like long one takes and I think, yeah, it's really great, but we're all watching it going, oh, you're doing a one take. That's like, it's a bit, you just sort of think it's impressive, but it doesn't pull you in.
Totally.
But this one is like justified because I think for the whole time you're holding your breath going, fuck it out.
Yeah.
For 2.5 hours.
And beautiful moments where you forget, right, that it is. Yeah.
Oh, we love that film.
Oh, we love that film. There's also, I was just going to say, there's also a crazy
Never
moment.
Stop.
Oh, sorry. You don't have to kick me off. But there is an amazing, this is me getting a bit geeky, but there's an amazing moment where they're about they're effectively three quarters of the way through the film on what we now know as their third take. And as I understand it, Leia takes a wrong turn in the car and starts driving to an area that they are not set up for.
Shit.
And the pandemonium that breaks out in this car is 100% real. Because it's like, you're about to fuck the whole movie. But obviously no one can say that. And as I understand it, the director is in the boot of the car with the monitor going, fuck, she's going the wrong way, fuck. And just watching it and knowing that is just like the most exciting thing in the world. And then I can't imagine the party they have when they pulled it off. But yeah.
Wow. Great, great answer. Now, looking at the time, it's nearly time to go to the audience, I think. Now, Will Porter, your favourite film is Good Will Hunting, correct?
That is
correct.
Correct.
Now, Will Porter, you've been really wonderful. You have. I couldn't have asked for more. The thing is, when you went for that swim in the sea and you got seasick and you thought, oh, there's some turtles, and then the turtles grabbed you and held you down because of something you may have done in the past, and they and they held you down and you drowned, but what happened was, when you inhaled that last bit of water, it really made your body massive. Like, you sort of swelled up.
Oh.
And also, we didn't find you for quite a while. And so you'd been eating. There were, like, dead things inside you. Like, it was a lot. It was a lot more than we were planning for. Bits of sharks. Anyway, we managed to get you out, but you're a fucking mess, I'll be honest. And we put you in the coffin, but there's just more. Like, I think we got a bit of coral in there. There's too much stuff. We jam you in the coffin, but there's no room for all this stuff. There's now only room for one DVD that we can slide in.
Okay.
And on the other side, there's movie night every night, and one night it's your movie night. So what DVD are you taking?
Am I allowed to take a film that I previously mentioned?
Yeah.
I think for pure nostalgia and to hang out with my hero in the afterlife, I'm taking Hook.
God bless you.
Taking Hook.
It's a great answer.
Going to Neverland.
And no one else has taken Hook.
I'm glad.
They're going to be very grateful.
Taking Neverland.
I thought you were going to say, purely to hang out with my hero, I'm taking the island.
That's it.
Ladies and gentlemen, just to sort of, I guess, wrap up the podcast bit, will you please give a massive round of applause for the absolutely brilliant Will Porter.
Thank you, Brett Goldstein. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. You've been excellent. Will you stay?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, I think we haven't got long because we've been having such a lovely time. But if there is anyone who would like to... look, this lady is bang up for it. Can someone get a mic to this lady in the thing? I mean that nicely. I don't know the word for it. Headband? In the thing. Yes, hello.
Hello. Lovely show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just wondered... If you wanted to go and do your own podcast, say on cuddling or something like that, how would you go about doing that? How would you set that up?
What would you call the podcast?
I like cuddling.
I like cuddling.
Yeah.
I'd just invite people around, explain what happens in the podcast. I mean, they're furious about it leaving.
She's going to get a wallet to fund it.
To invest. Oh, lots of disdain for the cuddling podcast. I would just make sure people consent and they know what's involved. But go for it.
Would you do it sort of close on or close off?
I'd probably... again, check with your guests.
Cool.
I'd say it's up to them, really.
Okay. And do you think it would get on at the BFI or?
Well, some of the people here in the room, I'll certainly ask them. I'll tweet you later.
Thank you. And one other question.
Yeah.
How would someone go about getting on your podcast if they'd seen quite a few films?
if they'd seen what?
Quite a few films.
Yeah.
But they can't remember anything from any of them.
This is Lou Sanders, ladies and gentlemen, who always, who, if you listen, always interrupts the podcast, and I will not have you on it. Is there anyone else who is not naughty? Yes, you, man.
Hi.
Hello.
I just wanted to say that The Island is a great film. And also, I just wanted to also say that it was based in the future. Right. I think it was made in like 2003 or something, but it was based in 2015. And there were like flying trains, flying cars.
I think it was 2019.
And clones. Yeah. Oh, 2019. Yeah, yeah, very soon.
Yeah, basically not next year, basically. Yeah. It ain't going to happen. Yeah.
Thank you for defending that. Michael Bay's wife is here. go for it. Thanks.
So you missed out one of the supplementary questions.
Yeah, we did out of because of the we missed out. There is often a question.
Oh,
why don't you answer? Tell you what, why don't we hear your answer to the missing question, which we left out of respect for the environment. Is it the subsection of sexiest film is Traveling Boners Worrying Wydons? And it's the film that aroused you, but you think probably shouldn't. And what's your answer, sir?
It's also The Witches.
Very good. What's the time? We can maybe have a couple more if anyone has any.
Yeah, are we ever going to get a Brett Goldstein Films to Be Buried With, where we find out about your answers to the questions?
Maybe. maybe when I die, I'll do... Maybe like the last... Well, that would be a really shit last episode. Maybe on like 100, 500, something. I'll do it one day. But once I've done it, then it's dead, isn't it? Because then you're like, he don't like that film. Every time. But thank you. Maybe one day, if you want it. Maybe I'll do it privately. Where do you live?
Wherever you want.
Oh, this is going very well. Do we have anyone else? That's probably be the last.
Okay, one of my favourite films is The Son of Rambo.
He's in it, did you know?
I know, I did know. and I was just wondering if you had any like fond set memories from that film.
Thank you so much. That genuinely means a lot. That's cool that it's in your favourites. Yeah, wow, so lucky, because that was my first job, and arguably like spoilt me in the sense that, you know, it was at an 8-week shoot over a summer holiday when I was 13, and it was a film about some kids making a film, so I didn't have many excuses to mess it up, because I just had to be myself effectively, and I got so lucky in that my like film parents, people who introduced me to the film world, were Garth Jennings and Nick Goldsmith. Two of the nicest human beings, so patient with me. I'll tell you a funny anecdote which happened. Me and Bill, on our first day, I distinctly remember this. Our first day, some of the camera ops were talking to us, and they were like, what films are you into, lads? What do you think? You know, what's your favourite film? Obviously, I was like, The Island.
Correct.
Nailed it. Instantly gained the respect of the camera department. And they said, who do you think the greatest actor is of all time? And I was like, oh, there's a lot that rests on this question. I didn't know what the answer was. And I just went, having said The Island, I think they're probably like quite low expectations. And I said, De Niro. And then they were like, nice choice. And I was like, that's going to be my answer forever. Because it got a good response. Anyway, we were stood doing the camera test. And they said, you know, all right, roll over. And me and Bill genuinely just went... And physically rolled over. And it was like... and they were like, oh, bless them, lads. No, that wasn't for you. It was the biggest rookie giveaway. Me and Bill genuinely took rollover to me. It must be filmic for turnaround. There we go. And we turned around.
De Niro does exactly the same.
Yeah.
Right. I'm afraid that is all we have time for. Let me just wrap this up for the podcast, where I will say, so that was the live episode. Thank you so much to Will for coming here and for you all for being here. Special thanks to Melanie Hoyes for hooking this up. Thanks to Kate and Anna at the BFI. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics, Lisa Lydon for the artwork. And most of all, thanks to all of you. Have a great week and be excellent to each other. Thank you so much. You've been wonderful. Really enjoyed it. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, guys.
Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
Well, how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.